Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge Lists and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I am your host, Shannon Holiday, and I am joined in the studio with Letitia Thomas. Now, Tish, before I ask how you're doing today, I do want to tell the audience that although it was last week, we have hit 50 episodes. I just want to congratulate me and you on hitting 50 episodes overall. We've hit the half ton. I'm very excited. How do you feel about it?
You're like, I just want to publicly congratulate the both of us. We're doing a great job.
Look at us go.
I hope everyone at home is enjoying it as much as we are because we've made 50 and look at us go.
I know. It's exciting.
No, it's actually like insane and like, yeah. I can't really fathom it.
It's crazy. We like, didn't think we'd even get here when we started this 18 months ago.
I didn't think we'd get to one episode when I agreed to do it.
No, because we had no equipment. There was no plan. There was no name.
No, you just said.
No logo, nothing.
You said you want to do a podcast and I went. Yeah, sure.
And you're like, this won't come into fruition.
This won't happen.
This won't happen at all. And look at us. Less than 2 years later, we've got a seasonal-based podcast. We've got reviews out. We're getting some free movies and stuff. It's going really well.
No, it is. It's going great.
Yeah.
I'm so burnt out.
Although you are really feeling the effects of it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm busy. I like to keep myself very busy. Not really intentionally. Just I think it's a hallmark of my personality. And then I get to a point I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna start smoking or something. Like,
I'd love to see that just because of what the character would look like of you smoking rather than actually you smoking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just so much on my plate right now.
Did I tell you about the first time I was smoking? Did I tell you the first time?
No, I don't think you have yet.
So I hadn't as a kid because my parents smoked and then it was cool in grade 8 and then grade like 9 upwards, our school moved. And then it was like kind of impossible to smoke at school. So like the phase just went out. And this was before vaping because I'm old. Anyway, so I hadn't really because none of my friends were smoking. And then I went to our old work friend Katie's 30th. And she and Sherry were smoking and they looked really cool. You know, Sherry, she's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're smoking. And me and one of the other ladies like went and sat with them. And they just they were like passing a cigarette around and they just handed it to me. And I just went, you got to do this.
I gotta look cool in front of these people.
Look cool. You gotta pull this off.
And
I was just like praying I didn't cough my lungs up. But I can smoke cigarettes. I can't vape.
I remember you tried one of my vapes when I had it. I've now kind of quit lately. It's been about 6 months, I think. So I've had one since then.
Yeah, you don't know.
But one of the last ones I had, I was like, you haven't tried it. And you're like, no, I haven't. I was like, look, just give it a go.
Yep.
And you took a draw and you immediately basically nearly threw up.
I've tried vaping a few times on a few occasions and I can't do it.
Technique.
I cannot. I've smoked a cigar once. That was weird.
Oh, if you can do that, you can do anything.
Yeah, that was at a rap party. We all handed the director's cigar around and then we went, ooh, COVID? Because it was the first day a lockdown had lifted.
Well, if you didn't have it then.
Yeah, look, it was fine.
That's fine. It's also like smoking like 6 cigarettes at once.
It's disgusting.
It is. Yeah. I'll definitely agree with you on that.
Yep. Anyway, don't smoke, kids.
Yeah. Look, this is
a vape. Don't smoke.
PSA announcement. Don't smoke. Also, good luck getting a vape. So moving on from there. But yes, back to the fact that we've done 50 episodes. I'm very excited to see where this ends up in the next 50. Hopefully, we've absolutely skyrocketed in terms of stardom. We're going to have our own show and on TV. Who knows? Who knows? The sky's the limit at this point.
I'm just imagining you with true fame.
Ah.
And
I would love it.
Yeah.
I think I'm destined.
I think it'd be fascinating.
Yeah. I don't know how I'd go because I know a lot of people like obviously that become pure proper celebrities. Uh-huh. They get a lot of PR training on how to like handle media. I don't know how I'd go with that. Just be like, oh yeah, you have to do this interview with such and such. Don't say this, don't say that. And I'd just be like, good luck.
Yeah.
We'd see.
I feel like I could pull it off, but I would definitely be one of those like outside of the work, I'm a recluse. I already am now. I'm already off social media for the most part.
I think a lot of celebrities are like that too. Like even like their interview personality is a version that's not themselves. Oh, I think a lot of them, like, it's a lot of people, like, social batteries, everyone's gets drained to a degree and they have to kind of, you know, take a step back out of the limelight and just recharge again, like we all do. I definitely know whenever we finish recording one of these episodes and it's the drive back to dropping you back home is very quiet comparative to the drive over to do this. Because we've spent all of our energy and social batteries in this like episode.
Yeah, it's like, oh, sorry, I can't.
No, I'm the same. Yep. Like, we just sit in silence. I might turn some music on and we're just like, nothing.
Yeah.
Don't have to talk for a little bit. It's good. It does drain you. So I can imagine being a celebrity would be the same because it's so much more on all the time. And there's so many versions of yourself you have to put out there, which is not your true self. Because you're trying to be this thing for so many different people or things, and it's a lot. It's a lot for other people, not me, because I'm not a celebrity yet.
I wasn't sure where that was going.
Neither did I. You let me talk, Tish.
I had all these like snarky things lined up, ready to go, depending on where you were.
Yeah, the smirk on your face was like, you've got something to say, but I'm going to keep talking, like, so you just can't let it out. But moving on. On that note, how have you been this week? Have you been, besides being overwhelmed with a few things in this podcast?
I mean, that's just my life.
Yeah.
No, I've been good. I was doing some work with a friend on the TV series we're developing. Although I say doing work, I didn't do too much. Like, I've been working. So, yeah. But I've been sort of looking at that, looking at this. Yeah, just getting my life sorted. I'm having a week off, and instead of doing nothing, I'm just filling it with work.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Writing work.
Yeah. I mean, it's all work, but yeah, that's pretty much been about it. I've been reading a bit, old Shirley MacLaine book.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. She's an interesting woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's published in the 70s. So it's like, you know,
50, 60 years ago.
Ages ago. Yeah. And even at that point in her life, like, she had done so much. She's been to like nearly every country in the world, like hung out with like a tribe in Africa.
Oh my God.
And like, yeah, just like super close to this like tribe in Africa, and they were just like looking out for her while she was like on safari and stuff. Like, she, yeah, like married a guy that was American but pretty much Japanese. She spent a lot of time in Japan. I've just been reading about her in India. Like, this woman is fascinating but also like hilarious. Like, when she was a kid, her and her brother Warren Beatty, they would be at home and they would pretend to be like upright citizens. So they'd both take it in turns to do all their chores and stuff, and then they'd go out to the streets and like set fires, upturn bins on people's like ring door, like just full menaces.
Menace.
And then they'd come back home and their dad would be like, oh, these children just running around ruining the neighborhood. And they'd be like, oh,
who's
yeah,
doing
dad,
that?
These children ruining the neighborhood. And like, their parents,
your children,
no idea. And this is like, they're like under 10 at this point. Like, they're little. Like, this is amazing. But yeah, I'm nearly finished.
Destructive.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. That's awesome that you read that. I had a bit of a busy week. We've got a few things happening at work that I can't really talk about, but it's a lead up to something coming soon. So I've had a lot of time to go over that. And then in my spare time, I've been, you know, watching the odd movie here and there. Mm-hmm. We do have an episode coming up that's going to coincide with the Olympics. We're going to be doing sports films in a couple of weeks' time. So that's a bit of a teaser there. But I watched a couple of sports films this week. The two I'll talk about now is I watched the ice hockey movies Goon and Goon Last of the Enforcers. They're from 2011 and 2017 respectively. It's a Sean William Scott movie. He plays this dude called Doug the Thug Glatt.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. And he's like, it was funny. Like, I really enjoyed both of them. It's funny because he's doing the same Sean William Scott shtick from like American Pie and any of the other ones that he's in, like Road Trip. And he's playing this like meathead muscle bouncer dude, but like he's really nice and simple. But at the point of like, you're like, okay, he's playing this dumb character again, but is he like a bit special needs? Like, he plays it on the borderline,
mm-hmm.
so you're not sure. It's really good. It's got Alison Pill in it as the love interest, who's obviously in Scott Pilgrim. And it's also got Jay Bruchel, who plays the voice actor out of How to Train a Dragon.
Right. You're looking at me with all these actors. I'm like, yeah. They're beyond me at this point.
It's an ice hockey film, but it's mostly about the fighting and the brawling in ice hockey because he's a really good fighter because he has to defend himself when he's in the audience of one of the games, and one of the coaches see him just beat this other dude up, and he's like, "You've got it. You're a star, basically." And he's like, "Okay, like I'll join the team," because he wants to do something with his life, but he can't skate.
Right.
So the first film's quite funny in terms of like he can brawl, like that's what he's been brought into the team for, but he can't skate to save his life. So it's quite comedic. And the second one's like once he's kind of really good, he's basically injures himself. It's like him trying to get back into the team and if he should or not, or should he become a family man. They're not bad films. They're a bit of fun.
I've never heard of them until right now.
They weren't advertised. I feel like they were just DVD releases kind of things. And because I don't remember them being at the cinema either, but they were on Stan. So I was like, we're doing sports soon. Let's check this out. I like Sean William Scott. He's funny. Simple funny. And that's all they were. I knew what I was getting.
Sometimes that's what you want. You just want a movie that promises something and then gives you that and delivers on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was it was enjoyable. It's not going to win an award, but it was enjoyable.
I've been watching some intense stuff this week. So I watched season 3 of The Bear, finally up to date. It ends on like a to be continued.
Yeah, you said that.
I didn't know that was going to happen.
It's frustrating.
No, it's a very good show. Like genuinely a very good show, is enjoyable to watch because it's at that high caliber. But at the same time, it's really stressful.
That's what it's known for.
And it's just baffling that it's so stressful. And I don't know. I think because this season didn't have that closure, it sort of left me just being like, okay, so now what? As opposed to like, oh, that was a good season and like it wrapped up. That being said, it just got nominated for like a ton of Emmys for comedy. And I know sometimes that they used to do, if it was a certain length, it would then be considered a comedy in the awards categories, but that's sort of not the case anymore. And it's left me wondering, just chuck it in drama.
I've had this discussion with you and a couple other people. It just doesn't feel like a comedy.
I didn't laugh. I didn't laugh much at all.
No, it's frantic, which maybe could be like, that's a funny situation. Yeah. But it's not a comedy. It's genre bending. It's more drama. It is more drama. It's dramatic.
There's elements of comedy in it, in the sense that there's comedy in life.
I would say but like the drama outweighs the
comedy. No, definitely. Yeah,
it's. I don't think it's fair to any of the other actual pure comedy series that would probably go up against it in these awards.
Yeah, no, nor do I.
Because, it's not, in my opinion, fair. It's not in that genre.
I don't think so. And especially this year, and we may as well just talk about the Emmys now because they've been
announced.
Announced.
We are doing a live episode.
But a lot of the big dramas this year that would be in, and even comedies, aren't in it because of all the strikes.
Mm-hmm.
So you've kind of got a lot of underdogs that haven't – some of them have been nominated before, but a lot of them would have probably been overlooked, which is not to say that they're not good. It's kind of nice that they're actually getting recognition.
They get a chance this year,
But there is sort of that gap in that it could be thrown into drama this year.
Yeah. The only other one, like I said, I think you earlier, was House of the Dragons, the only one that's going to this year release and do well in drama.
And then like some of the comedies that are up as comedies, like you've got Reservoir Dogs, which is amazing. Hacks, which I need to catch up on because I've already seen season one, but that's incredible. I think What We Do in the Shadows is another one. There's a lot of comedies.
Yeah. They're built around comedic situations.
Yeah. And then you've thrown The Bear in, which is kind of like, I think it discredits The Bear for the kind of show that it is, considering it a comedy.
Yeah.
And it discredits comedies that are promising you comedy.
Yeah. I think they need to reevaluate where The Bear sits. I didn't think even season one was a comedy.
No, I didn't think so.
It's just an odd decision.
Yeah. So I watched that.
Great show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not incredible. A comedy.
The other one I watched, which is not a comedy, is Under the Bridge, which was a show that went to, I think it was Hulu. So we only just got it on Disney and I've been kind of waiting for it to pop up. And that's been nominated for an Emmy for short mini series type thing.
Yep.
And that was incredible. Series. So that was Riley Keough and what's her name? Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah,
so it's the two of them. Riley Keough is playing Rebecca, I think Gibson, which is the name of it. Like it's based on a true story. Mm. And she was a writer that went back to her hometown in Canada to write about it. And a girl gets beaten goes missing and then turns up murdered. And she befriends some of the kids that are involved in it to try and sort of have something to write about. And then you've got Lily Gladstone's character playing the like cop investigating it. But those two have like a complicated history in that like it's a small town. So they all kind of...
Everyone knows each other and
everyone knows everyone. And yeah, it just tells the story of this murder of this young girl.
Okay.
And how everyone in the town was sort of culpable in certain ways. And then just sort of how grim it is that kids can kind of be so cruel to other kids.
Oh yeah.
But then in the other half of it, it's kind of like they're also just kids. Like where's that line of brutality when you are children? But yeah, it's a really good show.
Yeah, okay. I might check that out actually, because Lily Gladstone's fantastic.
Yeah, it's 8 episodes, so it's not like, oh.
It's a quick fix.
Yeah. And I binged both of them this week.
Yeah, okay.
Which is why I didn't watch a lot of movies.
Yeah, you said you're like, I'm down a television rabbit hole at the moment. I'm like, oh, what are you watching? And then you obviously said The Bear, and I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
that's one of the things you kind of want to watch in one quick hit.
Yeah, I wanted to have watched it so that it didn't get spoiled for me. Not that it's like a super heavy spoiler show, but I wanted to enjoy it for what it was before.
You just didn't want to know what was going to go.
Yeah,
go on. That's fair.
That's been me.
That has been you. Because you probably watched more hours than me, that's for sure. I only watched like 2 other movies this week. The other one was, I watched Venom Let There Be Carnage from 2021. Because I know that the third one's been announced. There's a trailer out. There's a movie poster out. And it's coming, I think, towards November this year or October, end of October. And I didn't mind the trailer of the third one. I was like, ah, cool. That looks actually a bit of fun. And then I realized I only watched like half of the second one way back when I think it first came to streaming. And I remember not like loving it. And I was like, why didn't I finish that? I can't really remember. So I went back and watched it today. Not today, sorry. Like this week. And yeah, I still have the same point. I was like, I don't love this film. It's a very mismatch in like pacing movie. It's very strange. And yeah, the CGI in it's a bit all over the shop as well. It's directed by Andy Serkis. So if you know from the Gollum kind of.
Yeah, I was going to say Gollum.
Gollum or Caesar out of Planet of the Apes. He does the mocap for all that. So he does the directing in the second one. And I don't know if it was because it was like maybe one of his first things he's kind of directed. It was just a bit of a misfire. And they did Carnage poorly as well. Like Woody Harrelson plays Carnage as like the villain of the film. And I don't know, just the way they fleshed out his character, unappealing, wasn't great. Hoping the third one kind of redeems it, because I didn't mind the first one. The first one was a good origin story for this version of Venom and Eddie Brock, and it doesn't really take place in like any other series. Like it's not part of the MCU. I think it's supposed to be part of like the Sony universe, but it's not, no other thing is mentioned. Like there's no Spider-Man mention or anything. So it's its own vessel, so it can really do its own thing. So we'll see where it ends up, because I'm pretty sure they're only doing 3, given it's like the third one's called The Last Dance or something. So I think it just kind of wraps up the trilogy of Venom movies. Yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment, but I'm hoping the third one kind of alleviates any issues from the second one. The other movie I watched was Days of Thunder, 1990.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
I've not seen that. I mean, I've seen it, but I haven't seen it. I've watched it.
I thought I had. I hadn't, though. It's basically a ripoff of Top Gun. It's the same director. Pretty sure it's the same writer as well, and just came afterwards. I think they were riding the coattails of the success of.
Is this sort of like they did Pretty Woman, and then they went, oh, let's do The Runaway Bride?
Yeah, it's one of those situations. They're like, ah, well, audiences love Top Gun. They love that whole rivalry become friends situation in like a plane. Let's try a car. And yeah, it was very similar. There's a love interest in Nicole Kidman. This is obviously when they kind of sparked their relationship in the early to mid 90s. It was, I don't know. To me, NASCAR isn't the most thrilling thing. Like when you've got like fighter jets, it's like, that's pretty full on. That's pretty thrilling to watch visually. And like the stakes are higher. Like they can die at any point.
Mm.
Look at Goose. And then this one, like, yeah, they can crash and they get injured. But like, I feel like the stakes are just not as high. And NASCAR, and I've had this opinion the whole time. Like I love my motor racing. I love F1. I like other types of racing as well. But for when it comes to NASCAR, I'm like, it's just a giant circle. They're just driving around in a giant circle. I just don't get it. I just didn't get into the action part of it. So therefore, when it got to the dramatic part, when halfway through, obviously him and his rival crash each other out, they get injured, they become friends rather than rivals. The, you know, textbook trope story of, you know, an underdog redemption story. I just wasn't on board because I was like, I don't care if he wins. It's NASCAR.
And I think it doesn't help when you've already seen him in Top Gun.
Well, 100%.
That's super exciting.
Yeah.
So comparatively, it's like, this isn't Top Gun though. I could just go and watch Top Gun.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. It's I feel like they were riding the coattails because I looked up a bit of IMDb trivia on this movie after I watched it, and the script wasn't fully completed when they started filming.
I'm not surprised.
So there were apparently rewrites happening the day of shoots, and the fact that sometimes even Tom Cruise didn't have time to learn his lines because they were literally getting him that morning. Some of his lines were duct taped to the front of the car that he was sitting in.
Oh my God.
So he was
amazing.
Reading them. Apparently that happened once, but then he crashed because of it. So then instead of putting on the screen in front of him, he was getting fed the lines through an earpiece while he was driving around the track. I was like, they made this on the fly.
Well, that's what's interesting. Like, it happens sort of somewhat often. And often you can tell, but like when they did the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie, they were handing, what's her name? Keira Knightley,
yeah.
Like lines on a napkin. And she's like, but like, what's this got to do with anything? Like, where does this come in? They're like, don't worry, just go say it.
I feel that with that third movie.
And she's like,
that was a mess.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I haven't seen them for a while, but it's fascinating how they do.
Dead Man's Chest was really good though. It was really good. And it set up obviously to, like, it's a 1 and 2 piece movie, that one, Dead Man's Chest and At World's End. But that third one just became a mess towards that middle part of the movie. Like,
I loved it.
Alliances with who's fighting who anymore. And I just,
I haven't seen it for a long, long time. So I think I enjoyed it as a kid because it.
I'd say rewatch it.
Really fun. But
look, don't get me wrong. I like the Pirates of the Caribbean films. They're great adventure films. But that third one in particular is probably my weakest liking of a film in the series.
Although they did do two others after
they
that.
They did, four which and I've five.
Not, I've seen four, I haven't seen five.
You haven't seen the fifth one?
No.
It's not well loved, but I think it's fine.
Oh,
completely,
okay.
Completely fine. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, side piece. But they were doing that on the fly for Days of Thunder. Yeah. I don't know why. They clearly made some money. And that's about it this week that I watched.
Yeah, we're about to go see Maxine tonight, actually.
Absolutely we are.
Which is going to be super fun.
I'm very excited for this film for many reasons. We really both liked the first two.
I love that we've seen all of them
together.
It's kind of fun.
This is our trilogy now. We went and saw Pearl in the cinema.
I know. Do you remember watching the first one?
Yes. We had a group of people here and we were like, let's watch X. It seems ridiculous. And then we watched it and it was more ridiculous than we ever thought.
And we're just like, we don't want to see that. No.
Old people sex. Oh, God.
Yeah.
It was a good film though, but it was a bit confronting in some scenes. And then when we realized Pearl was coming to cinemas in Australia, we were like, we got to go see it. The origin story of her character. And we loved it. It was phenomenal. The fact that Mia Goth was snubbed, I think, in the Oscars for that soliloquy she does towards the end, or stream of consciousness scene, where she's speaking basically, I think it goes for like nearly 6 minutes long, where she's doing like that monologue piece. And then the camera just does not cut away the entire time she's doing this speech. I was like, she is a star.
Yeah, I need
that
to
rewatch. That was an incredible scene.
That film, actually. I haven't seen it since. Anyway, not that we have time.
And then we're seeing Maxine tonight, which is the third one in the series.
I'm excited. I haven't really seen much of the trailer. I've kind of been
avoiding
trailers recently. Like the second Beetlejuice trailer came out and I haven't watched that yet.
I have. It's exciting.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was like, is it a good or bad thing? I don't want to know.
After this,
I don't want to know.
You don't want to know? Okay.
I just want to go see it.
All right.
When it comes out.
I won't say anything. I'll leave it.
And then I have no expectations and it's fun.
It's not far off. It's like September 6th or something?
September 5th.
Your birthday.
Yes.
Yeah. I knew it was around then. The day of. Yeah.
Yeah, day of.
Yeah.
I don't have plans. Let's go watch it.
We are going to go see it. After this, we're going to go see Maxine. And then next week is Deadpool.
Yes,
and
it
Wolverine.
Is. I haven't seen the second one yet.
Now it's in the MCU, so I don't know how much you'll need to.
I mean, I'll still watch it. I got carded at the first one. I was 18. It was like
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you
a school
don't look 18.
School day, and they said, "Yeah, but I didn't look 15."
Yeah, well,
I was like, "Let me in, please." Like, here's my uni ID.
Yeah, what I will say is the marketing for Deadpool has been. They've pumped money into this one. They're banking on this doing well.
They know what they're doing with Deadpool. I'll give them that. Yeah. They are very smart with it. And it's
someone's baby. Mm. It is Ryan Reynolds' baby since day one when he did the first one and he pushed to get someone to greenlit that movie. It's been his thing he's wanted to do. That's the difference between a lot of other projects that the MCU are doing.
Yeah.
They're just a product
mm-hmm.
rather than I want to make this thing.
You can feel it.
You can feel the difference.
When certain ones have been driven, especially even by the leads.
Yeah, they're 100%. Just, yeah.
They're so well done as opposed to,
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians, yeah.
With James Gunn, loving that.
The Black Widow one too. Yeah, 100%.
I really like that actually.
That is one of my favorite openings to any film I've ever seen.
Really
is
cool.
That Nirvana montage. Yeah. It was so dark.
Yeah, it's heavy.
Yeah.
But also just the fact that Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh's chemistry was really, really good. Like the dynamic between the sisters was awesome. It was just a good film.
And also I'm like anything espionage, I'm kind of there.
I love it.
Let's be honest.
A bit of espionage. Wish they could have done more with the Black Widow
solo
films, but obviously they kind of wrote themselves into a pigeonhole with obviously her passing in Endgame and then obviously setting it just in between Infinity War.
Yeah. Well, it's like, what do you do? You've kind of...
Yeah, or like just before Infinity War. I forget where it sits, but it's roughly there.
Just before because it's after Civil War, isn't it?
Yeah, it's after Civil War before Infinity War. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But it's like, you can't do anything else then because she's...
Dead.
You know where her story goes.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm kind of glad that it didn't get made 10 years earlier because it was such a good film when it did get made. Yeah. But they could have done more with that character at the time.
Oh, 100%. They could have done more with that character. It's disappointing, but it was a good film, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. Come at me.
Come at me. Right at me.
Come on.
So that's what we've been watching. I think it's about time that we spoke about the big topic of today.
I think so.
And I'm actually pretty excited to talk about this one. Because it is not something like it's not like, hey, here's a director, or here's a film series. It's like, cool. What happens when a movie is expected to do really well and it just doesn't? So we're really tackling the topic of box office flops today.
Yeah, I did a bit of research for this.
Me too, actually. I looked into a couple of films. I was like, yes, that's one. Yep, that's definitely one. And what I want to say at the top is we might start talking about budget versus box office versus net loss. I do want to say that anytime I've kind of say a number, they are nominal and not adjusted for inflation. So they are not in today's money. They are how much they lost for the year they came out.
Yeah.
So no inflation. So you can just imagine if it's like a 1990 film, it's probably going to be higher in today's dollars.
Yeah. And we just got figures off the internet. So
yeah, we don't know exactly. But that's what people are reflecting, saying how much they lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's exciting. There's some big ones in here. There's some obvious ones and there's some not so obvious ones.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into this kind of stuff since my uni days when I did. I think there was a subject I had that was like the business of Hollywood.
Mm.
Things have changed a lot. And I think it kind of reflects it as we talk about some of the films in here.
Mm-hmm.
Just the difference in why things were failing then as to why they fail now is fascinating. And the industry's in a sticky spot right now where
mm-hmm.
I don't think they're doing themselves favors.
No, we discussed this yesterday. Was the fact that we kind of had a brief discussion about Furiosa. And obviously that film hasn't done very well as of today. Like, you know, I think it's like budget 168. It's made 173. So therefore it is making a loss of quite a bit of money because we've spoken before how it's roughly going to make twice its budget to break even due to overhead costs marketing, other things involved as well. The issue with obviously we spoke about Furiosa is the fact that they've already put it to streaming. Like it's a rental based thing. Like you can get it on Amazon, rent it, and watch it there.
And it's also still in a couple indie dendy theaters. So you could go see it in the theater where you should watch it because of its scope. And I'm not being Elitist. It's just genuinely better to see it. Like I missed.
Agree entirely.
Like Fury Road, and I'm super mad. I never saw that in cinemas. If it comes back out,
we have to see it.
Bums in seats. Like, I want to see that.
Yeah.
It's such a tricky spot right now where stuff is so. There used to be clear windows, right? So it would have a release in theaters for ages.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would go to DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Then it would go like
for free to air.
Then it would get video stores.
Yeah,
we're talking way back. Yeah, DVD video stores. Then it would go to free to air.
Mm-hmm.
At the very end of it, like it would take a couple of years before it would be playing on TV.
Yeah,
and then sort of once like SVOD came around, which was like streaming video on demand, you used to have a clear window for that as well.
Oh, that was
about 10 years ago. Now it's on streaming and in theaters.
It's weird. What? It's a weird, weird, weird world.
Yeah. What are we doing?
Yeah. I think, look, I watched a video on YouTube of this topic about a week or two ago, and they were discussing the fact that obviously the dynamic of movie theaters have changed. One of the big things was audiences are expecting just to wait for it to come to streaming, because if they can wait like a month, cool, they will. They'll just wait an extra month for this film to be available at home. Because if you think of how much a movie costs, this is obviously American. It was an American-based video.
Yeah.
To take like two parents, two kids to go see like a family, you know, movie. You're looking at like $20 per head.
Yeah.
So that's $80 plus obviously food and drink, which is astronomically priced for movies. You're looking at about $100 just to take the family to go see one film.
And that's not.
That means you have to drive there as well.
Yeah, fuel, park.
All that jazz. But if you wait another month, you can rent it for maybe $20.
Yeah.
Maybe it might even be cheaper. The whole family can enjoy it in one sitting at home, in the comfort of your home. You're saving yourself like $60 to $80. And given the cost of living crisis, which is, it's pretty bad here, but it's definitely really bad over in America right now. That's what's happening a lot more. And so they are shooting themselves in the foot by releasing these films like within a month or two, straight to streaming services where you can just rent it, or it is actually literally available to stream.
And that's the thing. When it's on streaming as opposed to the renting through the streaming services, people are already spending way too much money right now. Like we're all in agreement how much it costs to have every streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
People are already paying that money. They want to get bang for their buck because no one's got money, even though we're spending money, right? So they just sit at home. And like, I get it. Don't get me wrong. Like I love going to the movies, but I don't go nearly as much as I'd want to go. Would have gone if the tickets were cheaper.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to like, okay, so I go there, then I'm going to have food. Then I'm going to like, who's got, and also time. Who's got the time?
Because the movies, it's 2 hours, but it probably takes about an hour to get yourself over there, an hour to get back, just roughly.
Yeah.
You're going to have a 3 to 4 hour experience.
Give or take. Yeah.
Give or take.
And that's
give
the thing,
take,
right? But, like, my local theatre, the closest one to my house, is crap. It plays like
it's a smaller, tight knit movie theatre.
And it plays most of the big Hollywood pictures.
Doesn't do indies.
Nothing indie. So if I want to go see a movie on my day off, it's like on a trike.
We were looking at Kind of Kindness. To possibly seeing that soon. That's only an Indra, which perspective, that's about half an hour drive from where we are here.
Yeah. It's not far, but it's not close.
It's not close. You got to go out of your way to get to it.
Yeah.
You're going past three other movie theaters before you get to that particular one. So it's a lot of factors as to why current films are probably not doing as well as expected. And it's a big thing is money, convenience, time, all of the above. The fact that, it will be available to them in a readily steady fashion. It's the same with Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny.
Oh, boy.
That was part of that, but also the fact that the budget was $250 million. So for this film to even break even, it had to make roughly around $500 million. So it was up against the wall to begin with.
That's the thing, right? So it costs – it's so much to make it. Was that CGI worth it? I don't think so. I couldn't see it because they didn't light it. So well done. You could have cut half the budget on the CGI and paid someone to do lighting in that CGI and we would have been able to see it.
Well, here's a discussion for you as well, is CGI costing. Is just for example that when they released Godzilla Minus One recently, that movie only cost $15 million to make the entire thing and release it. And in my opinion, and I think a lot of people will probably agree on this, that's the CGI in Godzilla Minus One is some of the best looking CGI from last year.
Interesting.
Yeah. It only costs that much. So I don't know if it's what they're doing in these big budget films to cost $250 million. Like a lot of that would have been marketing. You'd probably take off $100 because of marketing. It was $150 million to make the film. Regardless, yeah, you can do it on a smaller scale and still look really good. So where is this money just wasting going away?
Yeah, I do wonder that. Like, what are you doing with all this money? But then the other thing as well, and particularly one like Indiana Jones, right, is in this country, in Australia. Before that came out, Disney stopped physical release.
Yeah.
So in the past, often movies would go, instead of going just to streaming, they'd go to DVD and they'd get their money in that sense. Also, they would bank on DVD sales after the movie came out for people that missed it to buy the movie and boost their budget. Like not budget because it doesn't make the same box office figures, but they'd still make money back.
Oh, they'd be making some type of revenue. If you just look at the studio Ghibli model, that makes something like 6 times it usually does in theaters from a Studio Ghibli release on DVD sales.
Yeah.
It's insane. So you can make money out of physical
money,
media.
Right? What Disney did is they stopped it in this country, and every other week I have someone come into my workplace.
Hey, do you have this?
And ask me, hey, can I get the last Indiana Jones movie? Nope. I've got all of the others. I've been collecting them since I was a small child, and I would like to have
the box set
the
or
whole
something.
Set.
Yeah.
And I go, no, sorry. And they're like, well, what do I do? I'm like, well,
you're going to have to stream it.
Good luck. Yeah. And it's kind of, it's really disheartening to see like older people who have collected it their whole life. Right. So they deeply care about it and they, you know, they want it part of their collection, which I think a lot of people that listen to this podcast probably understand. And you can't get it. So they've lost money in that sense. They can't even make money back from DVD sales on that title.
I think that was a poor idea for Australia to stop doing physical release for Disney, because I'm the same. I would have probably bought a Indiana Jones box set if the fifth one came out with it. I was thinking about doing it, and there's a box set of the 4 of them out already on 4K. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to bother. I'm not going to buy that.
Yeah, why would you
use
one missing?
There's one missing. They're not releasing the fifth one. Why am I bothering? If I'm going to have to watch it on streaming and have that streaming service, I can watch the other 4 there.
And that's the thing, right? Like Disney fans, like true Disney fans, like yes, they have Disney Plus, of course, like who doesn't? But these people are like mental collectors. Like they're buying the DVDs, whether they're outdated or not, they're buying that.
Yeah, but like if we think of Disney, it's not just like Indiana Jones, the MCU, it's Star Wars, it's a bunch of other things.
It's anything Fox had.
Anything Fox had. So all those things you really can't buy anymore. So there's so much they could have released. There's so much Pixar that will sell so well. Like think of Inside Out 2 won't come out on DVD.
Do you know how many people were trying to get a copy of Inside Out so that they could go take their kids to the theaters to see Inside Out 2?
It would have been the hottest film of like the past couple of weeks before it came out.
I would have made so much money.
Yeah.
But no one's going to buy a 4K of it.
No.
I mean, they are, but like not when it's like, hey, I just need to show my kids before we go see the next one.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, oh no, sorry. You need to have the streaming service to watch that one. We're out of stock and we're not making any more of it. But you're not going to get the second one on.
I'm not going to get it.
You're not going to get
it
at all.
Kind of a bummer because I've got a you know how they would send out copies to the stores to play on the TVs?
Yeah, that was like a promotional
thing. Promo thing when Disney used to put money into promo.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Blu-ray of it. I forgot I had it.
Oh, Inside Out 1.
Yeah, when I closed down a store.
Oh,
they were like, does anyone want this? And I was like, I'll take it.
Yeah, I got a bunch of those as well.
Yeah.
When I left the last store I was at, I forget what I've got. I think I got like Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or something and a few other things. I think I got the Wizarding World movies.
Yeah, because at a certain
Potter,
point,
but
they
other
get
ones.
Rid of them. Yeah.
I wouldn't have bought them, but I've got them.
I've got them. But yeah, it's just, it's interesting.
Yeah. And so that's the issues about the movies now. There was a period of time, I didn't put many movies in my list when I was looking this up from 2020 to about 2023.
Yeah, the recent ones.
Just because there was that whole issue around COVID. Mm-hmm. They weren't releasing like movies in cinemas. They were just going to streaming. So therefore the movies look like they weren't making as much money. So if you look at like things like Wonder Woman 1984, it made like hardly any money because it wasn't really in cinemas, was it? It was put directly to streaming because no one was allowed to go to cinemas at all at that time. But, you know, it still did quite well. So I didn't really put in 2020 to 2023 movies that much.
Yeah.
saying that, I noticed you did put Strange World in, and
I saw
you
did watch that last night. Yeah.
So speak to me about that one, because I think that one's past the point of COVID being an issue.
Yeah, it was released 2023, and I think it was one of these ones that Disney had released recently and kind of buried before they could put them out, which is a shame. And I don't know why they did it in a true sense. Like, I can only speculate in this regard. So this is a film. It's like an action adventure film about a bunch of explorers, a family of explorers, and they're all kind of, they see the world the same but different. You know, when you don't like your parents because you are them.
Yes.
Yeah. It's that kind of idea. And the grandfather of the family was like an explorer, and he explored the world, and he dragged his son along with him. And then in one of the expeditions, the grandfather goes missing. They assume he's died. So the son comes back, starts his own family, and then, you know, they're farmers now. They farm this stuff that they found that gives them energy and whatnot. And yeah, they're just like farmers. But then, his son is kind of like, yeah, but I want to be an explorer, like Loki down low, like he's kind of having fun with it with his friends. And then, you know, things happen. This crop that they have that's bringing them energy starts dying. So they're like, okay, we have to go figure out what's going on. We think it's at the core of this world that we're living on, so we must go explore. And the dad's like, fine, I'll go. You're staying home. And the kid's like, no, I'm coming with you. So that's kind of where the film kind of goes. And you've got all of them exploring and stuff. Yeah, this film was like super heavy on the diversity, in that a lot of different like races and stuff within. So there's depictions of that. The young kid, he's like, I don't know, he's like 15, 16. He's got like a love interest, so he's like a boy. Totally fine. It's all done very casually, in like, this is the real world that we're living in, where it's going to depict it on screen for kids, which is nice, Pixar. But Disney's pretty conservative. So I think they sort of went, yeah, let's bury this. So it's similar with Turning Red, you know, where it was like, oh, we're going to do this one. Is this? And then people, they get backlash from America before it even comes out, where it's like, oh, there's like a small mention of that. It's kind of like puberty with girls. Ugh, yuck. Gross.
It literally wasn't an allegory.
Yeah. And they went, oh, yuck, we can't have a film like that. So like these kind of films get buried because they're progressive.
Disney's like progressive. It's passive aggressively progressive, where it wants the appearance that it is really progressive, but it's not really.
But really, we're all Ninth Degree Masons.
Basically. It's Walt Disney. There's a lot of videos on YouTube about how like formulaic the Disney Corporation is around these inclusion stories that they're putting out there, and how much they put in, when they put it in, who's it, there's all that. It's very formulaic, so it doesn't feel sincere again, and that's the issue.
I think this is one they put it out to go, look at us, we're doing it, but we're not going to advertise it. And then it stops working, which they haven't been, they go, we're going back to our old model. That being said, I really enjoyed this. It was kind of a little bit, what's that book where they're on the back of the turtle, like a Discworld. Is it Discworld? Am I thinking Discworld?
I don't know.
It's a little bit this one, that idea, a little bit, I think, Journey to the Center of the Earth. And they said, what if we took these two ideas and then made it about this family? That's kind of the vibe. Okay.
That's fine.
It's fine. And I think it's one of those ones that, like, maybe had I seen this as a kid, I would have enjoyed watching.
Yeah, that demographic, like under 10, would have probably loved it.
Yeah, it's like just a sick little adventure.
I think this is one of the ones where they put straight to streaming in a month.
Yeah.
Because it didn't do well at the cinema, but you didn't advertise it. I didn't even know it was out till it was out.
Exactly.
And I'm pretty in the world of cinema. I know about most things. And I was like,
how are you going to take your kids to see a kid's film if you don't know there's a kid's film out for them to watch? Yeah,
exactly right. Like, there was no lead up marketing, which of a lot of the others.
When I was growing up, and you too, like, if there was a kid's film out in cinemas, we all knew about it. None of them ever went under the radar.
No, all the big ones from back then you just knew about, right? Like, it was crazy.
And if they weren't big, they just went to VHS. So they weren't advertising in that sense. Yeah. But like, if they were out, bums were in seats because we knew about it.
Let's talk about the ones that were so severely underperformed that they ended up closing a few studios because there's two of them. There's one that you watched
recently. I don't think I did watch it. I think I wanted to watch it.
Right, okay.
And then didn't end up watching it last night.
There's another one that I did watch when I was a kid, and I'll speak about that one first. It's an animated movie, and it's from 2003, and it's called Osmosis Jones.
So yeah, I don't know if
anyone's kind of around my age group is aware of what Osmosis Jones is. It's about this, like, I think it's like a blood cell within someone's body. And it's like this whole network of like cells are like, you know, like the animated characters, and it's got to fight like these things that are coming into the body to save the person. And it's live action as well. So Bill Murray's the actual body.
Yeah, I've just looked this up and I'm like, yeah, I never saw this.
And the main character, Osmosis, is voiced by Chris Rock. I loved it when I was a kid. So it came out when I was 13. It's about that age group. Like, it's, you know, young tweens, you know, that kind of thing.
Space Jam era.
Space Jam era. Oh, that, oh yeah, that's way earlier, but still. About that type of feeling of a film. I liked it, but apparently this did so poorly that the feature animation studio subsidiary of Warner Brothers, this and The Iron Giant did so poorly in the cinema, they end up closing down the feature animation studio that is, part.
We were talking about this. I was like, I didn't even know Warner Brothers had one.
Right? Yeah.
But so that's interesting because Iron Giant.
It's well regarded
now
film.
It's well regarded. We just got a ton back in at my workplace for like a 90s curation because it's a cult.
It's a cult
thing
film.
Now,
it's a cult
but film. Not at the time.
No, it did. I looked up a bunch of the films that this studio did. So it started off with Space Jam, the original Space Jam from 1996. That was like a budget of like 38. It did $250 million. Insane. It was very popular at the time. Why not? Exactly. Looney Tunes, great. Every other film that came out after this ran at a loss.
Oh.
Yeah, so there was like two more besides like Iron Giant and Osmosis Jones. So it definitely was hemorrhaging money. And I guess Osmosis Jones was like the catalyst for them to go, nope, we're just shutting this down. So they kind of like moved the other workers into other legs of Warner Brothers. And any other kind of animated stuff they were doing kind of ended up becoming like more of a leg of Hanna-Barbera that they owned at the time. But yeah, completely shut down because of this film. Yeah, it's insane.
There was another one that I looked up and I meant to watch it, but
I've seen this one in my Stan list. I've added it and I haven't watched
it yet. Yeah, well, I keep seeing this at work because it's on 4K now.
Yeah.
So you can buy it on 4K, but like...
Mm. So Cutthroat Island from 1995.
Yes, thank you. I was lost in all of our notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this one had a budget of 90 to 100 million.
Wild.
It did. And now listen, so 90 to 100 million, it did $10 million. This one is a pirate film starring Gina Davis and Matthew Modine, who you would have seen in Stranger Things for anyone that's young and didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one was like just a female pirate film going on a pirate adventure. And this film did so bad that it shut down the production company that made it. And its failure killed pirate films so much that when Disney went to do Pirates of the Caribbean, they were like, do we want to do this? They
questioned it, yeah.
10 million, that is...
That's grim.
Grim. There's no reason it should have done so bad. I don't know why it did.
No.
But now you can buy it on 4K.
Speaking of which, so another one from around the same era. So from 2002, there's a film called The Adventures of Pluto Nash. You probably haven't heard of it. That's fair. Similar thing. So it had a budget of $100 million. It made $7.1
million. Oh, even I can do that math.
I know, right? So roughly 96, and that's not including marketing costs. It's a stacked cast.
I was going to say, you watched this.
I did watch this week because I was like, what the hell? What is this thing? I haven't heard about it before. Why is it done so poorly? There's a bunch of people in this film. So it's got Eddie Murphy, Randy Quaid, Rosario Dawson, Joe Pantoliano. So you know that from the Bad Boys. He's the chief out of the Bad Boys films. Luis Guzman, Peter Boyle, and Pam Grier, and John Cleese.
It is stacked.
Absolutely stacked.
The budget went to them.
Yeah, probably. It's a very weird film. It's set on the moon. Pluto Nash is played by Eddie Murphy and he runs the coolest club on the moon. And space gangsters want to buy his place so that they can build a gambling casino because there's no gambling on the moon yet. And it's from there, the plot is muddled. The pacing is awful. The writing is off. And the CGI is very cringeworthy, to say the least. So there's a reason why this film did badly, but it was during an era where it's like, I guess word of mouth did actually work pretty well. So some people did see this and obviously it just got absolutely panned. It's considered one of the worst films ever made and it is infamous for one of the biggest flops of cinema history.
Yikes.
It is a real stain on Eddie Murphy's career. And Randy Quaid, not a fan.
Not a fan of him. Who is he? Is he related to Dennis?
I don't know if there's a relation, but he's in a bunch of other things. So he's in the Independence Day films. He's the uncle out of Christmas Vacation, like the Vacation mm-hmm. films. And he was actually in Days of Thunder as well, randomly, as like the team owner. I don't think he's a good actor. He's actually frustrating in every film I've seen him in.
He's the reason they
can't. He plays a robot security guard for Pluto Nash. And he's like got a bald cap on because he's usually got hair. So he's got a bald cap on. He's got something weird done to his eyes. And he speaks like a robot too. And he walks like one. And I'm like, this is just cringe. It's so bad. I can't do this. But I watched the whole thing. I got through all of it.
Oh, well done.
So there is a reason for some flops. This one was just a poorly made film. Even the director's come out and said it was
not great.
Not his best work.
Yikes.
He's like, everyone on set, like sometimes you know like some scenes just aren't working. He's like, everyone knew on this film that none of this film was working.
Oh, it's grim when that's still, the feeling.
They had to keep making
it. You can't not make it, right? You got a studio going, we've put money in, finish this film. Yeah.
Apparently, the studio went and wanted reshoots with some of the CGI, which is why it went up to $100 million. It was this whole thing, there's all reasons why, but yeah, $7.1 million of a budget of 100. Rough time.
Yikes. I've lost all my notes for this one, so I don't know how much it lost. But I rewatched part of Treasure Planet.
Oh, you did too.
Yesterday.
Yeah,
so I didn't quite finish rewatching it, but I had seen this as a kid. Now, I never went to see Treasure Planet because I wanted to see Treasure Planet. I was asking my sister just to confirm, for whatever reason, and I don't know how it ended up happening, but we went to the movies with the assumption, and this was my mom and I think my grandma, the assumption that we were watching Finding Nemo. And then Treasure Planet played. I don't know how it got modeled up. I wasn't in charge of tickets then, I was about four. But yeah, I remember watching Treasure Planet. I remember not loving Treasure Planet because I was like, this isn't Finding Nemo.
This isn't the one I wanted.
And this is weird. I watched it yesterday and I went, oh, this is just a ripoff of Treasure Island. I'd rather just watch the Muppets.
Treasure Island and Muppets Treasure Island or any other Treasure Island.
Or any other Treasure Island. Yeah, it's a weird one and it tanked and I can kind of see why.
Yeah, it's Treasure Island in space.
Yeah, but
animated as well.
But all the characters are like just like odd
versions.
Things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what?
John Silver's like a cyborg.
Yeah, there's like a cat woman thing. Yeah. It's like,
I remember when this came out and I haven't seen it because I was like, this does not interest me in the slightest.
It interests me, but I was there.
I saw it against my will.
I helped box office.
You're the probably 1 million out of the 1.2.
Sorry, we thought it was funny anyway.
Yeah, that's wild. There's a few films that are notorious for massive losses. So just briefly, John Carter from 2012. So budget of 263, which is insane for 2012 money. Did a budget, but the box office taking of $284 million. So at the end of the day, after all said and done for John Carter, net loss of $255 million for Disney.
Ouch.
It's a Disney film too. So I've watched this and look, this film wasn't, I usually like a, you know, good space adventure film. Wasn't amazing. Like it wasn't like a terrible film. It just wasn't great. It was very forgettable in terms of the characters, the setting. John Carter's based on like those like new pulp newspaper comics or stories that were like written in old newspapers from like the 1920s or something. And though, you know, you get the newspaper every day or every week and it kind of continue the story. It's one of those stories, but adapted into obviously 2012 era.
Yeah.
And it just didn't translate. So like it's mainly Taylor Kitsch's, or however you say his name, Kish, as Vessel. He plays John Carter. But it's one of those things where it's like it starts off in the old-timey kind of days and he's like back then and then he gets transported to Mars.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's a space adventure.
Pick one.
So, yeah, story-wise mismatched. That's probably why it didn't do as well. But also $263 million in 2012
is a lot of money. Well, I went to see another movie that's a similar vein. In 2018, I saw Mortal Engines and I only saw this movie because I was working on a TV series while still studying, and it was at Southport. So I would go and I'd stay in like a hotel and overnight or whatever to do it. And so I just have like afternoons off after I'd like caught the train, and I'd be like, so what am I doing? I was like, I guess I'm going to the movies and just watching anything that's on. This was like a post-apocalyptic based on book series film that the intent was it was going to be like another dystopian type film, like Hunger Games and all like Divergent, all those kind of ones, but it just didn't.
Mortal Engines.
Didn't do well.
Yeah.
It lost a lot of money. And like, I know why it didn't do well. Like it wasn't, it was just kind of like, meh.
I remember when this came out. I remember the, you know, the trailers and stuff. I remember the marketing of it. I didn't go see it when it was at the cinema. I remember Hugo Weaving was in it. I was like, oh, I know him. Hey, he's a pretty huge actor. But I didn't go see it. I saw it afterwards when it was added to Netflix eventually. Yeah. So I have seen it. And yeah, it was, yet again, another forgettable action film.
It had
film.
A budget of around 100 to 150 million.
Yeah.
It made 83.7 million. Like the loss estimated is anywhere from 175 to 204 million. I know Hollywood's got money, but do they have this much money to keep throwing away?
When I see all these flops and I'm like, it's a lot of risk, isn't it? It's a lot of risk. Like I know there's like those big films that do pay off incredibly well.
Yeah, Barbie's
like,
made nine times.
Yeah, like
times.
But is that mental. Is that the outlier though? Are we looking at it from like, oh yeah, like Barbie and – you know, Oppenheimer and some of the, obviously the Avenger films did astronomically well.
Yeah.
But then you're like, look at all these like other films that just flopped and you're like, they're losing like all this like money they've made from these other films.
Well, I think
like, surely.
That's the thing. Like there's a trend when you look at the movies that are losing money and often they're big adventure type films that people are either going to love it or they're just not going to care. And, or it costs so much for now CGI and stuff like that. That they, and a lot of it, like a lot of studios recently have been just hemorrhaging money. And I think that's why they so strongly bank now on franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, they always have. It's been like a big thing forever. But
even more so now.
Even more now. Anything that's got existing IP that they know that there's an audience for,
yep.
They're like, we'll just fund that instead.
That's a safe bet. That'll make money.
I think Hollywood, just my hot take, fund some indies that are genius.
Well,
right?
Yes.
Cheaper.
There are studios that are doing it though.
They
so you've got your Neons, you've got your A24s. They do run indies at a pretty low budget anyway, probably like sub 10 mil.
Yeah.
And they're the type of films that definitely like will make 20 to 30 mil
easy.
So they're making money on each kind of lower budget tiered indie film. So they're doing it smartly, those two independent studios. It's the big ones that are not knowing how to do it properly. Like, yeah, Disney and Universal and that are just struggling to find that niche area.
I want to talk about our favorite flop. Our favorite flop we've seen recently in the last few years was Babylon from 2022. You and I put bums in seats. We helped box office.
We did.
It's one of my favorite films. I have yet to watch it again. I need to buy it.
But is that the issue? Is it because it's so long?
It is long.
Yeah.
It is long. Also, the guy explained a lot of it before we got there.
Oh my God. That was a situation. So in case the audience isn't aware, we went and saw this in cinema.
Yeah.
And we went to get our tickets from the candy bar, as you usually do.
From the box office.
From the box office, the area there. And, you know, you spark up a conversation because we were the only ones in the cinema area at the time. So he was just having a chat to us and, you see him, Babylon. Yeah. And then goes to explain.
He goes,
half,
I must forewarn you.
Yeah.
And we're like, what? No, we're fine.
Yeah,
he goes,
fine.
How are you with movies? We're like, we're fine with movies. Let us watch it, please. And he goes, I just have to warn you because some people have walked out and we're like, yeah, cool. Won't be us. We're going to watch this movie.
Yeah.
And then he proceeds to explain.
Like most of the film, like half the plot to us.
Definitely the start.
At least, definitely the start.
And we went, sir, we need to stop you.
Sir, we're about to see this film.
Yeah.
We're good. Luckily, it's not one of those films where it's like, spoilers matter.
No.
Like it doesn't. It's Babylon. It doesn't really matter. But I was like, Lisa, stop selling it. We've bought the ticket. It was very funny. But
I do really wonder why this film flopped as hard as it did. It's sort of it's a love letter in a like, we're going to admit some horrors that is Hollywood and especially Hollywood pre-code. I think it's just a gorgeous homage to Hollywood and what it was like in the early 20s before like the Hays Code came in and like really cleaned up Hollywood when we have an image to uphold. Mm-hmm. This was just the debauchery that's...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of it is based on truth.
Yeah. Yep. I'll die on this hill, the fact that this is a fantastic film. And if you don't, if you haven't seen it, which a lot of people clearly haven't, is to check it out. Yes, it is long. It is 3 hours and 9 minutes long. I get that. You don't always have the time.
You're watching at home now. Take a break. Go for a wee. Come back.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe do it in 2 sessions. I know you're not supposed to do that with films, but if it gets you to watch Babylon, I'm going to say do it. It is a really good film. It's by the same director as La La Land.
Yeah.
Like, if you love that.
And Whiplash.
And Whiplash. You know, really high caliber movies. And it's the same with this. It's incredibly well done. It's got Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie, Diego Calva, Gene Smart. You know, it's got a bunch of other people. Tobey Maguire plays a villain.
So. I would pay to see this in cinemas again. I had so much fun.
Yeah, same.
That ending of it was so gorgeous on the cinema screen. You know how it has all the...
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just like...
It's got a bunch of different miming things that to Shannon.
But I don't know how that would work on your TV at home. I don't know. But
unless you have one of those color lights on the TV like I do.
I don't know, but watching that in the cinema was... It was a magical experience.
The soundtrack is infectious.
Oh, yeah. We went home and was like, we're playing it.
I played the
separately,
soundtrack.
Separately, mind you. But we did. Were messaging each other being like, listening to it. I'm having a shower, but like, I've got the Babylon soundtrack on.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that this didn't do very well. And I kind of understand it. It just sucks that I'm a fan of it. It's one of those very pedigree based films.
It lost like $87.4 million.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. I also think when it was released was a big issue. Like, it was over the Christmas break / New Year's release here
COVID
in Australia.
COVID
was happening.
Fizzling out.
And also people weren't taking a gamble to go see a film they weren't really sure on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But I'll die on this hill.
I love Babylon.
I loved it so much. Yeah. But anyway, we got to wrap up because we've got a movie to see soon.
Yeah, we got Maxine to see.
But as always, thank you so much for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Please write in. I keep saying it, but I do want to have some people write in. You guys are everywhere in the world and I find that absolutely fascinating.
Literally, we looked up analytics the other day.
Yeah,
and
I'm like,
where
are you people from? I want to talk to you. But anyway, you can get in touch with us at Binge Lists on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, or you can email us at bingelistandboxofficehits@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good week and happy listening, happy watching.
Thanks, guys.